Hi, I'm Jeremy Franson, and welcome to another Internet Business Mastery audio blog. Today's audio blog is called The Secret to Endless Motivation. I'm committed to the idea of intrinsic motivation. In fact, I've been fighting for this idea my entire adult life. This concept is all about being internally motivated. Intrinsic motivation is doing something because you have a personal interest in learning and enjoyment in the subject itself. Now, happiness counselor and possibly the smartest man I know, Wes Bertrand, who researched intrinsic motivation extensively and posted his findings for his MA thesis called Learner-Driven Education, defines it as an interest and desire in learning which leads to more effective learning. Intrinsic motivation is the rocket fuel behind your single motivating purpose and why you desire to strike out on your own and create a purpose-driven internet business. Intrinsic motivation is at the core of why we desire freedom so much. Freedom is all about the ability to choose what you want to do with your time, your body, and the results of those actions, including financial gain. On the other hand, focusing on money is an extrinsic motivation, like grades were in school. Now, I believe, and I've seen over and over again, that in order to have long-term success and fulfillment, your business and pursuits must come from an internal, not external place. So are you intrinsically motivated?
Don't let school take you out of the real world. Never lose touch with what's going on outside of the classroom. One of the big problems we face is that kids are taken out of anything resembling a real world for 4 years for college, and they've lost that perceptive power of entrepreneurship because they don't have any connection to what's really going on in the real world anymore. Don't let school take you out of the real world.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome to the School Sucks Live show. On the phone with me tonight, Jeremy Franzen. You've heard him on the show before. What was that? We did an episode of Complete Liberty together.
Yeah, about religion.
Yeah.
Kind of our background of what we went through with religion.
Yeah, yeah. Very interesting and long conversation. And I think we're going to touch on that a little bit tonight as far as some having some different roots from where we are now. But Jeremy is the founder and co-host of Internet Business Mastery, which is a podcast, and there's also Internet Business Mastery Academy. So I was hoping we could start by talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, our big passion is, helping people get paid to live their purpose, which we've been told sounds a little spammy for whatever reason, but we're dedicated to it. We love to teach people how to use this internet business thing to further what it is they're doing with their life and being able to get paid with it by giving value to others. So we have people that do all kinds of businesses, everything from we have a woman that teaches other mothers how to, if they have to go on bed rest during their pregnancy, she teaches them everything from how to get work done at work, but at home, how to raise their kids. I mean, there's that. We teach people, some people do art and they teach other people how to sketch or art. I mean, it's just like everything that somebody could have as their major purpose, we teach them how to find the audience that would be willing to pay for that. That's kind of the core of what it is. So we teach everything about finding the purpose all the way to every little specific on how to run an internet business as well.
Now, would you say that as far as going after the single motivating purpose, was it always that, or was it originally just like, here's how to make money on the internet?
No, it was always, we were calling it the definite major purpose based on Napoleon Hill from Think and Grow Rich. But as I started writing some posts about it and getting definitions from different people, I saw that Napoleon Hill didn't really like narrow it down, because I was like always going, well, okay, you've got a definite major purpose, but do you have minor major purposes? Like, I just didn't understand exactly how it was. So we started trying to get more and more specific about what it is. And just recently, we actually, started talking about the mindset stuff much more, which is the blog post that you had contacted me about when I started talking about intrinsic motivation. So we've, in the last couple of months, just really started going into the mindset more. Whereas in the academy, the entire first module is about mindset. It's about this kind of stuff. But just out in the show, in the free show, we didn't talk about it quite as much, other than, on the podcast, we talked about it quite a bit, but we've really ramped that part up because after 7 years of doing this and seeing and being around some of the other guys that are in my industry, the you know, unfortunately, the get rich quick crowd, which is very different than what we are, you know, watching how they do things and realizing that really dealing with the mindset is probably the number one thing, even though most people think, oh, I just have to learn how to put up a website and, you know, how do I make money with it? Really, it's the mindset behind it. And even after 7 years, we keep running into mindset issues. So, but we've been, you know, talking about this all along, whether it be, you know, years ago, we were talking about Nathaniel Brandon's book, The Seven Pillars of Self-Esteem, when, you know, in this industry, nobody talks about stuff like that. So that was kind of one of the ways we differentiated ourselves. So it has been, but we've ramped it up.
Sure. And when you go at it that way, maybe this more traditional, you know, here's how to, maybe not even get rich quick, but here's how, like, your purpose is making money, yeah, that kind of website formula. The foundation just seems to be totally missing. And why wouldn't it be? Where would people have ever been introduced to this idea of, sure, we can all do the things we want to do? People in the least free places in the entire world can draw their blinds and, you know, do what they want to do in the, you know, in their own home. So everybody does what they want to do some of the time. But very few people, they think it's kind of fanciful and maybe even a little bit silly and capricious to think that you could actually make a living doing what you want to do. And I myself have been really inspired by people who do that. And, you know, a couple of years ago, even though I always liked the work that I did, I started asking myself the question, you know, how can I do exactly what I want to do? Not just tell myself a story, kind of like think about what I want to do and then try to wedge what I actually am doing into my ideal. So if it would be helpful, I think, for me and for everybody else, if we could actually put a definition to this single motivating purpose.
It's the purpose that you basically wake up for. And most of us are turned off by this by regular school, which is why this worked so well. We're taught you're supposed to do things you're told rather than really find and develop what it is you're here to do. So multiple different people from Ayn Rand, I read a book called Unique Ability that really helped us before find this in ourselves. And it was all about that main purpose of, you know, what wakes you up and makes you excited to live. So for me, my single motivating purpose is to inspire purpose-driven action that leads to freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. Mm-hmm. Now, my business partner, his is very similar, but it has to do with teaching and resources that lead to those same things. So I'm more about the inspiring side. He's more about the specifics. Well, here's how to do an autoresponder series with your internet business. Now, I know how to do those things too, but those are less about my motivating purpose, which is why we work really well together. You know, I'm very much on the inspiring part, getting people excited, getting people to understand this is actually possible. And then, you know, together we kind of, with more of him in the lead, do all the little specifics. So for me, it's about the inspiring, like the post that you contacted me about. You know, I woke up for 2 weeks before, you know, the only reason I wake up now for an alarm is because I'm able to take my kids to school. I'm with them whenever they need it. And I love to be able to do that. And we talk on the way to school and stuff. But before I ever get up for the alarm now, I'm waking up to be able to write these posts because I've got that single motivating purpose that gets me so excited to want to help people and to create value for people and teach them about these kind of theories, that the idea that they can make money by doing stuff that is really a part of who they are.
Now, just so we can personalize this a little bit too, because I think people enjoy that and they like to know where we come from. How did you discover this? I mean, you talked before, and I'll provide some context here. We did this show about religion, you know, and you had this start where, I guess the best way to say it would be you were rooted in a culture, an environment, a community that certainly Mormonism isn't rooted in independence or personal purpose. So, you know, and I think we all are to some extent. I think you were able to get out of something maybe in some respects more extreme than just the traditional school experience that 90 some odd percent of us go through as far as the collectivism and the, you know, the self-sacrifice for promise of reward later. But what changed for you? When did it change for you?
Well, I think, I had a grandma that even though, you know, she was raised in the Mormon religion and this kind of thing, she would also say, you know, weird things like if somebody else has done it, you can do it. If nobody else has done it, you can be the first. And she would be very much about, you know, she tried very hard in her life to break stereotypes, to be the first woman to do this. And she had that kind of mindset. And I grew up with her as one of the, you know, main people that, you know, not only was an influence, but she actually raised me for part of the time. You know, my high school years, I lived with her. And she was very much about that, which broke a lot of what I was being taught with the religious stuff. And then that kind of led to people like Anthony Robbins and kind of the self-help people. And it's funny because I don't know, cynically, I always was kind of like, oh, the personal development world, it's, you know, all rah-rah and visualization and stuff like that. But I've actually gone back to some of it and went, wow, there's some really important things here that are about being an individual, about really, you know, finding what it is in you that, you know, is not only unique, but that makes you excited to live. And so those were kind of the things that helped. It was one of these weird things where, as far as the religious stuff, I became kind of a rebel, and not in the way that I, you know, went and did drugs or any of that stuff, but in the way that I was like, I just didn't buy it. Like, it made no sense to me. I don't know where logic came to me. Because I was absolutely not taught logic. And, you know, in the last like 5 years on this path to the freedom stuff, knowing Wes, knowing you and trying to learn what logic is, I've really honed that down. But for some reason, I just didn't buy it all. I was maybe 14 when I said, I'm no longer Mormon, and had to fight that with my family. And none of it made sense.
Right.
So, you know, having kind of these weird, you know, kind of the personal development market, my grandma, they helped me kind of break free of some of them, not all. You know, it took me a long time. I was probably Republican until, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, when I even learned you didn't have to be Republican or Democrat.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I just didn't know what, you know, in Utah, you're just Republican.
That's
what you are. So, and in my mind, I'm going, oh yeah, more freedom. I love that. And that's what Republicans are. Okay, that's about the depth of my knowledge. But, you know, so that's basically where it started for me, I guess, as far as trying to find that. And just knowing throughout the years, I wasn't happy the other way.
Mm.
Like when I tried to do jobs that, you know, you're supposed to get married. And, you know, in Utah with the Mormon thing, every single one of my friends were married and had kids by 18. Like, that was very normal for my world. And just my rebellious nature, again, wasn't, you know, to smoke and drink, which actually all my Mormon friends did. Mine was to do the opposite of what they were all doing. So I was kind of the good kid that wanted to go achieve, I guess. And I left. I left Utah at the time, went into the whole Hollywood world, trying to, you know, be able to tell the story of you don't have to live this way, which actually led to the internet business stuff, also saying the same thing. You don't have to have that Sunday evening dread, you know, thinking, oh my gosh, I got to go to work tomorrow. I just love that idea of breaking free of what everybody else thinks is normal. So that's just something that developed in me pretty young.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that Mark Edge from Free Talk Live, you might be familiar with his story about his religious upbringing and how when he rejected it, or when he wanted to say, no, you know, this isn't real, this isn't what exists, it sent him on a path that wound up being very self-destructive, landed him in jail. And it seems like you really, you went the other way, and maybe having that positive influence, positive role model, you mentioned your grandma, and it raised this question for me that I think it's kind of like we have to see somebody else doing or living what we want and what we respect first. I think that really helps. And I think that for some people get stuck in that. Even if they go on and do their own thing, it's just like they're imitating somebody else. For me anyway, and it was a lot of different people through different phases of my life, but it was kind of, you know, looking up to people, but never really looking into them and seeing like, what can I get out of this? How can I recognize what they're doing that I like and harness it towards my own purpose? And not imitate somebody else. You know, for a long time, I was really convinced that I was supposed to be an educator, you know, and I realized that what I liked to do more, I mean, I certainly would would love to have a bunch of people listen to me and say, oh, wow, that guy is bright, and feel like I enlightened people. It's a good feeling, certainly. But I was really, what I realized is that I was more into it for the entertainment, right? So I wouldn't want to just read things to people or put together reports for people that could have way more educational value and lay way less fat than my podcast does. But that wasn't my purpose. And I think that's why I got bored with most of the academic or educational or teaching things that I had done in my career. It's funny. It seems like the first thing that a person should do is sit down and maybe do some journaling, maybe do some self-evaluation and figure out what this purpose is. Do you guys talk at all about a process for how to do that? Because I think a lot of people don't know. I mean, I would, if you put me on the spot, I think I would have trouble articulating it in a short form right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're in the process of designing an entire multimedia system on how to do this. So I'm basically learning absolutely everything about it. The book that helped me the most up till now was actually a book called Unique Ability by Dan Sullivan. And we actually took Dan Sullivan's coaching course because of that. And part of the process was really looking at what are the things that you could do even without pay. What are the things that you forget time on? And one of the things that helped me was I realized that one of the things I loved more than anything was inspiring people. I loved talking to them about what they loved to do.
Sure.
And then I wanted to find ways to help them achieve that. And that started, I mean, I was about 16 when I realized I was basically that guy for all my friends. If one of them was like, I want to go into drama, I'd be like, oh my gosh, let's find out how you can go into drama. And I'd say, wow, this really is you. You're always being like this. Or, you know, I have a couple of comedian friends that it was so obvious they were comedians and that they should be paid to do this. And my process was, without even thinking about it, I was doing everything I could to help them fulfill that goal or that desire. And, you know, I could remember all the way back to about 16 that was part of me. Whereas again, my business partner, Jason is a kind of a tips and teaching and resources guy. Like I can ask about anything through Skype to him and he'll go spend 20 minutes figuring it all out. And then he loves to be able to present it and go, okay, here's what you've got to do. I went here, it said to do this. And he's that guy with everybody, whether it's his wife or friends and family. When I go, he lives in Portland and I live in Salt Lake. When we go to Portland, if I say, oh, I want to go do this, like he's got everything planned and he knows exactly how, you know, we're going to do it to have the most fun. And like, he is that guy. And he says, you know, I was young when I became that guy. Like he said, if I wasn't doing this, I'd be a professor. So he's kind of like you in terms of the absolutely wanting to teach thing. And he became a software engineer, and that's what he was until, you know, we both started doing this internet business thing. But, you know, he always had the desire to teach. He, you know, taught in college and was, you know, teacher's aides and, you know, took over classes for people. He was just that kind of guy. But now it's a matter of how do I, you know, create that value kind of at a worldwide level. Mm. Like for him, that was the other part of it. You know, he didn't just want 30 students in a classroom. You know, we basically have the world. We have students in 120 countries. I mean, like, you know, we've got 3 million downloads last year, you know, nothing like Steph, who's at like 40 million, mm-hmm. but still like, you know, we've got millions and millions of people listening. That's crazy.
Yeah.
And the fact that we have that ability, you know, it gets me excited. I could go on a rant on that, but that's the cool thing about podcasting. But that was his thing. And, you know, as he went through the process, he started realizing that is who he's been, you know, since a certain point. Now, the part that I'm, you know, we're trying to learn is when does the purpose solidify, right? Like another book that talks about this is called Starting With Why by Simon Sinek, I think is his name. And he talks about, you know, there's just this time when through, you know, parenting, whoever's in your life as when you're younger, there's a development of this purpose. And, you know, I want to know, can we control that? At what age can we start living that? Because I have a 13-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old daughter, and I'm going, okay, how do I help them develop this at that age? But we're not sure about that stuff yet. Nobody really looks at that. So obviously listeners that are, you know, 14 or 15, I mean, the thing I would say for even that age is start seeing where you have a passion, not only for like, oh, I skateboard or that kind of thing. It's like, you know, how you interact with people, what really, really excites you above and beyond just yourself. You know, I skateboard and I like the movement. Oh, well, maybe there's something to do with moving my body. Maybe there's, you know, I love the camaraderie with the other guys that do this. I mean, we're still trying to develop this because people stopped at a certain point, anybody that teaches this. And I think that there's just not a lot of money in teaching people this because we're trained the opposite, right? The powers that be or school does not want us to be individuals. As you've talked about many, many times on your show, there's just not a lot of research past, you know, like at what point does it develop, you know, the very, very specifics of developing other than, you know, Strength Finder is also another good book, Strength Finder 2.0. That was very, very useful for helping me find, you know, this unique ability or in what we call it, the single motivating purpose. There's just a couple of resources out there now, but we're trying to develop it. I want to be a master at this so I can say the answer to all of these, but we're still very fresh and new to it.
Sure, sure. And you know, one of the takeaways from what you just said for me was there's also a real value that we need to place on relationships, obviously, right? Because you're saying that you have this dynamic with Jason that kind of gives it this ebb and flow that allows you to do what you do together.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought of myself as having ideas like, ooh, I want to do this. And, you know, just kind of like letting all these clouds of ideas go. And, you know, never really, I think that personalities can be contradictory in complementary ways where someone says, all right, that's cute. Come back down to earth. Let's talk about how it actually is going to happen. You know, let's talk about the resources that are necessary. Let's talk about the steps that you need to take. So, I mean, you can tell when I downloaded the audio version of Secret to Endless Motivation and I listened to you talk and it's, you sit up straight and you say, oh, listen to this guy, you know, so you have that presence and that presentation. And what I know of Jason, your partner, he wrote the first book I ever saw, might have, for all I know, the first book that ever existed about podcasting. By the time I got my hands on it, it was a little bit dated, but because he wrote it like before I think almost anybody knew what podcasting was, like 2006
or something like that, I think it was.
But just the step-by-step execution of what you need to do, the logistics of what you need to do. I like the relationship that I have with the people I work with because I feel like it's honest. I feel like their skill sets are different than mine, and that works. You know, I don't want to surround myself with people who tell me that, oh yeah, Brett, gold. You know, I want them to find the fault because there is always fault. So I think that's really important. I think cultivating those mutually beneficial relationships is really important. How did you meet him? How did you guys start working together?
Well, back when I was still working a normal job, I read a book called Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. And in that, you know, it's talking about, I had never even really thought about the idea of being an entrepreneur or marketing or anything like that. I had my passion, which was filmmaking. And at the time I was an editor at Warner Brothers. And I read that book and it made me realize there's, you know, kind of another way you can do this. And the idea of not getting paid for time, but for one thing, you do something once and then you get paid for it for a long time, or you buy a piece of property and you get paid for it, even if you're not there working, just really got me excited. So the only thing the book really talks about is real estate. So I started looking into real estate and I actually quit my job, moved back to Salt Lake City, and went to a real estate group. And he was the president of the real estate group. So he had done the same thing. He had read that book and went, I don't know anything else. I don't know about entrepreneur. He certainly didn't know about internet business, nor did I. And we got into real estate and I met him right about the time that at the same time I started actually learning that you could sell information. And he had actually videotaped himself teaching a class on real estate and was selling the videos. Mm-hmm. And since that was what I was learning about, I actually emailed him and said, hey, can we have lunch and talk about this, because I'm realizing I don't like real estate, or I don't like the process of real estate, and I want to go into this information thing. Let's talk. And then it became a, you know, every couple of weeks or something, we just couldn't spend enough time talking about it. And then, I don't know, maybe 6 months later, he found podcasting in like 2004, the end of 2004. And of course, it was brand new. Almost nobody was doing it. And he said, hey, there's this thing called podcasting where you can kind of have your own radio show. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm in. And 2 days later, we did our first episode and the rest is history. But that's how we met. And it was basically, the show was just us doing what we already always did, which was talk about internet business and marketing and stuff.
Right. That's cool. So you guys were podcasting in 2005?
Yeah, that's when we did like six episodes before we finally put one out, because we thought we had to do it that way. I don't know. We didn't know what we were doing. Nobody did. You know, he had to write the book.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he literally wrote the book so that there was a book teaching how to do podcasting.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's definitely not a bad idea. I wish I had put out recorded five or six before I started putting them out. It was funny, though. I mean, this was kind of, I was thinking about this when I was preparing for the show, that this whole intrinsic motivation thing, it kind of becomes like identifying it almost becomes second nature. Well, I'll start at the beginning. When I first did a podcast, right, when I first figured out Audacity, when I first figured out all the nuts and bolts of doing that very poorly, doing it very, very poorly, like quality wise, the satisfaction of completing a project was just so overwhelming that there was no strategy to it at that point. I was just like, people got to hear this. Or you know what? To be completely honest, I have to put this on the internet so I can download it and I can hear it.
Yeah.
I downloaded something that I did from the internet. And, you know, I mean, as far as the importance of recognizing this, there got to be a point with just doing the podcast where it wasn't giving me that feeling anymore. You know, like I still enjoyed doing it, but it had kind of lost the challenge and there needed to be something new.
Is that when you went into this video stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I feel like it's new again, you know, and it's still, I still think I'm doing the same thing, but the vehicle or the medium needed to change to keep it exciting. So
yeah,
it was the same thing again. I don't know if I want to call it a mistake, but it was like, as soon as I could render a file that was uploadable to YouTube, I was uploading it to YouTube because I was so excited. I didn't really care if anybody watched it, you know? And then I think maybe after that excitement wears off a little bit, and then you get to be more aware and sensitive to the plateaus of listenership and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a great feeling when the first thing is, yeah, I don't care if anybody else is interested in this or not. I'm just completely satisfied. And that kind of leads me to my next question as far as making money goes, right?
Well, let me say first about that. The thing that was always incredibly interesting and exciting for me, for every single listener we got, was it is totally intrinsically motivated. Nobody makes someone go to iTunes and look something up.
Right.
Like something drew them there. As far as I know, nobody's putting a gun to anybody's head and going, you've got to go listen to Internet Business Mastery. You have to listen to School Sucks. You know what I mean? Like nobody's doing that. And that excites me at a crazy level.
Yeah.
So every single person we got, and then when we got to number one relatively quickly for a couple of reasons, because obviously it was still new, but the people that were doing it in an old style. They were doing it like gurus. Mm-hmm. Like we've got our Ferraris and we're going to teach you how to do internet business in kind of a shady way. And we decided to go, hey, we're just normal guys, which is true. We're just normal guys that at that time, by the time we got the show up and we're doing the show, we were both full-time doing internet business. We had multiple businesses going each that were separate from Internet Business Mastery. And Internet Business Mastery was just a hobby. And, I just loved the absolute idea that people were finding it because they had this motivation or this desire that was separate from somebody making them. And that excited me about the podcasting thing. I just loved that idea.
Yeah, that's so true, because where else could I have been? I don't think I've been anywhere else in my life where I was giving information to people and they were receiving it in a way that was completely voluntary. Like, I think the SAT classes that I taught and the tutoring that I do is certainly closer than the school I was teaching, but there's all kinds of external circumstances that are putting that person there. And the truth is, if they had the choice, that 16, 17-year-old, they wouldn't be spending their Saturday with me. However I could enliven it or make it exciting or interesting the best I could, that's not their first choice. So yeah, you're right. That's as simple as it is. That's never even gone through my head before, that everybody who finds and listens to what we do, it's completely intrinsically motivated. And
well, the other part of it is, and part of what we teach now with the business side of things is, this is a voluntary value exchange. We're giving information and then we're allowing them to exchange value. Now, whether that's on the free side where we do the podcast, we do all the blogging, videos, this kind of stuff, that's all free. There's a whole free side of our business. And the value exchange is people retweet our tweets when we're talking about some video or a blog or a podcast, or they like our video on YouTube. I mean, there's an exchange there. But I think in terms of ours, where we're teaching them, you know, how to basically build an entire business where they can now exchange value with other people, there's something that happens when they do a full value exchange where they go, okay, this is worth X amount of money to me. I've put together money and I'm going to exchange it for what you're giving. It's worth that to me. I'm trading that value. And most people don't understand the idea of value exchange. It's funny. That's the next blog post after this intrinsic motivation that I'm trying to work on right now, is about voluntary value exchange. Now on my show, we don't get political at all. We don't even talk about religion. And I'll actually, as a side note, tell you some stuff, since this is kind of more the right place to talk about that, about how religion's kind of actually getting in the way of what we teach.
Sure.
But anyway, so this voluntary value exchange, teaching people that it's good for both people to have that exchange, is a weird concept for people. Like, people want to get everything free, but if they don't exchange the value, they don't give it value, the information. Because there's people that are like, oh, I've listened to your show for 3.5 years. I've just never done it. And then there's somebody that's like, I listened to your show, I bought your course. A year and a half later, they're making $30,000 a month selling how to sketch. You know what I mean? Like, and it's because of that exchange. Like, they're saying, hey, look, I want to exchange that value. And there's a benefit for both people. The person giving money to us for the product gets an extra benefit for the fact that they give that money. I'm trying to work this out to be able to explain it really well, but it's an exciting concept to understand that that's necessary. Anything that, you know, lets them give back, mm-hmm. because it's a benefit for them to give back to you.
Yeah.
And if you don't allow that, that's missing for them. And for a lot of people, I think what we've put into something is what we give that value of. So if I get something free, it's a different value than if I scrape together everything I have because I personally have a desire and I'm willing to buy the information. So there's just a different weight, because like, I had friends that would go, hey, I want to learn about this internet business thing. Can I have your course? And at first, they're my friends. Here, have it.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I learned about this concept. I wish I could remember where. About not doing that. I'm doing them a disservice, not letting them exchange value with me. So it's funny because my last friend that said, hey, I'd love to see in there, we have a friend discount, which is almost exactly the same amount. It's just a little less because, you know, they're our friend. And the people that pay for it have more of a, I don't know, like they've got, I can't remember what the term is. They've got skin in the game, so to speak.
Exactly.
Like, they feel like they're a part of it. They've exchanged value. It means something now.
I mean, I can just think of an example from my life that's a little bit different. This the means that we're broadcasting right now is through a program called Ustream. It's been an absolute nightmare, right?
Yeah.
But I paid a lot of money for it, right? So if it was just some piece of freeware, I'd be like, what are the alternatives? But really, I demanded that it be a return on investment and have researched it and troubleshot it and tried numerous things to get it to work. So I feel like there was that value exchange. When this is a fantastic program. It's incredibly convenient in a number of ways. It allows me to do all kinds of things that other options don't allow me to do. But I think the fact that I invested in it led to my perseverance with it.
Yeah.
And I think the way that would translate to maybe the podcast, I expect if people are sending me $6, $9, $12 every month, that if they have an issue with something that I do, that they'll tell me about it, you know? And they, or if I'm not doing something that they feel I need to do, that their engagement will increase because they feel like they are investing their resources and they're making a completely fair demand for value commensurate with what they're offering to be returned. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, and in my world, there's some people now that are giving everything away for free. That's mm-hmm. their model. And the way they're making money is just off affiliate stuff. So if they say, you've got to build a website, they say, if you click my link, I get a little something from it. So it's called affiliate sales. And so they'll give their course away for free and they make all their money on the fact that, you know, people are hopefully clicking their link. But the problem is with that particular model, and I'll give you an example of, we have a course that's similar to somebody that gives away stuff for free. The difference is if Google makes a change and people say to us, hey man, Google made this change, how does that affect what you teach? You know, we spend a week researching, making sure, testing, making sure everything works right, because there's a monetary exchange there. Like people have paid us hard-earned money to make sure we're updated. Whereas when somebody has free information, they're on to the next thing. They're trying to get as much traffic as possible. They have different focus. There's not as much of a desire to go back and go, do I really need to spend a week on something that's free? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm giving this free, you know, like, come on, go research yourself. I mean, there's this weird mindset for that model. And again, on both sides, on the content provider, as well as, you know, the person consuming the content, which is why, again, that value exchange is so important.
So the question, I mean, when I was talking about the satisfaction that I get, you know, being intrinsically motivated to pursue these projects and just the personal satisfaction that I get and really not overly concerned with what happens next. Obviously, as kind of a long-term strategy with income in mind, this needs to be a little bit better thought out. So I think there obviously has to be a nexus between what I want to do, what I feel my purpose is, or what brings me happiness to do, and what people want to consume. And of course, all of the details and the specifics, the five W's plus how that goes with that, answering those questions as far as like, how will people consume this and all that. There is that middle of the Venn diagram between this is what I really like to do, this is what gives me pleasure, and this is what people want to consume.
You know, how do I mix what I want with what I can get paid for, basically?
Yeah, or what people want to consume.
So recently somebody was asking, they said that they, and I think this is probably what you're saying, you know, they didn't think they could get paid for what their SMP was. And we started talking about that, their single motivating purpose. And for them, it was about teaching them a lot about engineering. They were very big on engineering, and I can't remember the exact SMP. And one of their sites had to do with steam engines or something like this. And one of the things I tried to explain to them is, if the market is too narrow, like you're trying to target, let's say, 14-year-old boys who don't have money. And
right.
Like that's exactly very, very specific, you know, steam engines. You might have to go one level back, because your SMP is still going to be about the teaching side, not the specifics of teaching how to make a steam engine.
Right.
Right. Like you're going to have to go one level back and go, okay, how far back, how many levels back can I go until I hit enough people that there's a market for the value exchange? So, you know, with him, I was saying, maybe it's more about a site on, like, there's a site called How To, and it's some sort of engineering site where the guide makes all these videos about how to do different engineering feats. And, you know, it's one level back. It's not just steam engine. It could be 40 things. And he could easily survey his market and go, what do you want next? And, you know, like, let them tell him what's of value to them. And I mean, that's going to be, you know, the next level is actually asking your audience what they're willing to pay for, basically. What's the next thing they need that they'd be willing to exchange that value? But it's a matter of focus. And, you know, if you have to go back a level or two, you know, that's going to be the necessity of it.
Yeah, I think there's also probably some value in examining what your connected skills are or supplemental skills. Like if my general skill is as an educator, right? There's a lot of real specific skills as far as communication, maybe managing a crowd, other skills there that could also be useful, right? That might allow you to say, okay, well, this is what I want to do. This is the general idea. But I also have all of these supporting skills. Let's call them supporting skills that might be able to better fit either things that are more specific or more general, right? But I'm still generally doing what I want to do. I mean, this is something that I want people to do, and I would love to see less people in my audience wasting $100,000 on college to get a business degree, and less people generally becoming dependent on some employer. And through the example that I'm also trying to live with what I do, make it appear that this is realistic. I think that there obviously is, as I'm learning right now, there's some fine tuning, right? So like you try something, it fails. All right, how can I reset? What skills do I have that I'm not using? What are my skills? Could I still use them and get the same enjoyment from this skill set if I was using them in a slightly different way towards a slightly different end? So from what I've heard, from what I've read, from what I've experienced, obviously, I think people need to recognize that there's more to it than just saying, this is what I want to do, and then doing that, and then making money, right? There's a lot in the way.
Yeah, I mean, because we make the joke all the time about macrame, which is a kind of knitting.
Yeah.
And, you know, we go, well, maybe macrame might be too far in, right? Like it's too focused. You've now narrowed it down to 8 women in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And they don't have money for whatever reason. They're not willing to trade that. They trade information between themselves. So they're not willing to, you know, learn about macrame. So you've got to go maybe another level back. Like we have somebody that has an entire business teaching how to make the bead jewelry and then sell them at swap meets and stuff. And they make money off that. So that's like, you know, maybe that's not macrame per se, but it's a kind of, you know, maybe they love crafting that way. And so they kept working back and going, well, really, I love, you know, part of their SMP had to do with showing people how to do thing, you know, these crafts and being able to maybe sell them in this particular way. That's the direction they went. But, you know, you're going to have to kind of look around for an actual market that wants to exchange value for that. If it's not, it's just a hobby.
Right.
Right. Like if you wanted to, you know, another joke about that macrame thing was somebody found a full body macrame suit. Somebody actually made that out in the world and was selling that.
Right.
And macrame, it's funny because it's knitting, but you can see through it.
Yeah.
Like in the 70s discos, people used to have shirts like that and they'd wear a shirt underneath. Like, so it's very see-through, this whole big thing. But, you know, there's no market for that. There's maybe 8 guys that would find that funny and, you know, and buy it. But it's matching a market and an audience that is willing to exchange value. That is part of the equation. And you keep moving what specifically you're going to do until you find that. So for instance, for me, this single motivating purpose and kind of the personal development world was, you know, again, inspiring has been what I've been my whole life.
Yeah.
But most people don't just pay you to inspire.
Right, right.
So in the case of inspiration for me, inspiration is the core for me. And for me, I just actually, just because I was doing it, found that I love internet business. And I love being able to teach people how to exchange value and create value for a certain audience. So that's kind of around the core, you know, that's the money-making part of this core of inspiration for me. Mm. So if it's teaching for you, you know, it's funny because I talked to Wes from Complete Liberty about monetizing and what's necessary for monetizing. And sometimes, you know, I know there's somebody out there, I wish I could remember the name, but they teach a freedom course, like how to understand anarchy. And unfortunately, a lot of the people that are into, let's say, the freedom movement, they are either against marketing or they just don't want to learn it, because that's the part that will be needed to sell teaching freedom.
Yeah.
Right. And maybe people don't want to buy it. And then at that point, you have to go another level out and find something you can. Because like you were saying about the SAT, I'm thinking of 2 examples. One of our like most well-known student, his name's Pat Flynn, and he was an architect, and he learned how to take the green exam, which teaches architects how to build the whole green theory of, you know, biodegradable, or I don't even know all the specifics of it, but he taught people how to take that exam.
Right.
And that's where he was making about $25,000 a month on that, because nobody out there was doing it that way, the way he did it. And then we have another person that's a doctor. His name is Ashish, And he's a pediatric doctor. Can't remember the exact name of it, but a pediatrician, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he teaches doctors how to prepare for that exam because they're changing the rules of it. And you only get three times or you can not be a pediatrician. Mm. And so now it's really important that they take it. And within those first three times, they get it. And there are some people that takes five or six times. So he teaches that. He makes his entire living outside of now. He does 1 week as a pediatrician and the rest he spends with his family. And on this, he's doing, I can't remember what it's called, donating his time in India to kids that don't have the money for doctors. Like he's able to do all of that because of this internet business, teaching people how to take that exam. So there's lots of ways to do it. And he loves the education of that. And he loves teaching these doctors how to get prepared for this exam. So, you know, that is kind of an offshoot of what it is he loves, which is, you know, helping take care of kids. And he's able to do that. Now it's kind of a little bit of a side road, right? Like it's not directly, you know, teaching people to be doctors themselves, but he's teaching them to how to do an exam. So when you talked about the SATs or something like that, you know, maybe it's something like that that works for you that actually helps fund what you're doing now.
Well, it was always a question I asked, right? Because I knew it was the skill set of things that I like to do. Like it could be informative. It seemed to meet a lot of the needs that I have for how I wanted to put the skills that I possess to work. And the difference between what I do here on this show and what I would be doing there is piles of cash there. And everybody seemed to realize that. And it seemed like around 2008, 2009, like 12 or 15 companies in New England realized it all at once. And that's great. I mean, speaking just from free market principles, it's great that there's a lot of competition, but with the resources that I had at the time, I just couldn't stay afloat. Now, knowing that I like to do this, I'm just trying to go through or explain for the audience here too, some of the steps that I've been through with this. Knowing this is something that I like to do, I possess the skills, opportunity to make a living exists there. Now, all of that stuff in place, it requires a retuning to what's the niche that I can find in it where that can still work, right? Because just having those three things wasn't sufficient. So
yeah, you're trying to find a need in the market.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, once you pick the market, you actually have to find the need. And yeah, I mean, talk about capitalism. Like if there's not a need, people aren't going to pay for it. And this is where, you know, it's not kind of the airy fairy, oh, just, you know, you love skateboarding. Well, somehow you can get paid for that. You know right. what I mean? Like you still have to find value in the audience by doing this purpose that you know, is a part of who you are.
Yeah.
In the same way, as I said, you know, part of my purpose is inspiring purpose-driven action. Well, you know, if I didn't focus that correctly, people aren't going to pay me for it. They are not going to find that value.
Right. Jeremy Franzen from Internet Business Mastery is my guest. We were talking in the first hour about intrinsic motivation and maybe some practical applications and strategies once people identify a single motivating purpose, how to apply that to the world around them. And I wanted to, again, reference this piece you wrote called The Secret to Endless Motivation, which was about intrinsic motivation. And there's a couple handy checklists in it. One of them, ways you can tell that starting a purpose-based business is an intrinsic pursuit. Yes. So the first one says, no matter how many fears and extrinsic challenges are in the way of finding an audience and getting started, you still have the desire or spark to do it. It seems like a lot of people, at least from what I've seen, are kind of shut down by maybe some of the state-created obstacles.
Yeah.
Do people ever bring that up to you? Like, have you seen like the regulatory obstacle course that's in front of me doing this?
A little bit. I mean, people want to know, should I start an LLC? You know, what kind of, you know, how tangled into that? And, you know, we're very much about, you know, getting a CPA and dealing with it. You know, don't get yourself in trouble. There is a level of jumping hoops, but in a lot of ways I go, because for instance, I have multiple entities that I use that, you know, protect me, but you know, obviously in a free market, like I wouldn't use those things, but we're not there.
Right.
You know, we're not to that point yet. So, you know, we first, whenever we get into anything legal or in that way, we very much are big on saying, look, this isn't legal advice. At this point, it's actually entertainment. We can tell you what we did, but we can't even, you know, this is a personal choice you've got to make in that realm. Am I going to have an LLC? How am I going to do my taxes? We just tell them how we do it and that, you know, we're just giving that as an example.
Right.
Because, you know, people could sue you for anything. I mean, that's the crazy
nature. Yeah.
It's absolute insanity how that works. And, you know, it's funny, the lawyer that I use on my businesses, we actually had lunch recently and he said, tell me more about this purpose-based business stuff. And I'm going, well, first tell me another lawyer just in case you leave. Because, you know, like once I start telling you this, you're never going to want to be a lawyer again, you know?
Yeah.
You know, jumping through that hoops for right now, I think is necessary, protecting yourself. Like after all of this work I do, if somebody can just take my house because I said something they didn't like, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it's not that much money to protect yourself. Now, you know, we added actual protection again that maybe I don't particularly agree with if we were in the free market, but, you know, I've done to protect my family and myself.
Yeah. So it's interesting that there are these state-created and litigious obstacle courses that might provide people with an actual testing ground to see if this really is their single motivating purpose. Don't expect any thank you notes anytime soon, though, state and lawyers. But some of these things I certainly understand could be insurmountable for some people at certain times. I mean, if the variables just don't come together the right way, something might not be able to move forward at a certain time.
Can you give me an example of what you're meaning about that?
Oh, sure. I know somebody here who tried, they moved here and they wanted to open a restaurant, but then it seemed like the way the regulatory structure was set up for that kind of business in this place, they would find that you had to make it. It was almost like some kind of like being on some weird game show in a foreign country where you had to get to like a certain point so you could see the horizon of the new regulations that you now had to meet, right? So you had to spend a certain amount of money to get to this this lookout where you could see how much further you actually had to go, which was very frustrating. You know, like having to buy some kind of ventilation unit that blows hot air instead of cold air so people won't want to shut it off in the winter. And it's a steal at $75,000. Well, when your startup budget is $100,000, you know, that's a big hit. And obviously, I think we understand that a lot of regulations exist to raise the bar, raise the point of entry by people who are established in a certain industry or in a certain place to prevent new people from being able to get in and compete. So, you know, big corporations love regulations.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I'll tell you that the school my kids go to, which is a private school that's very much about this intrinsic motivation, they almost went out of business this last year because of all the new regulations. They have a new building that they're in, or I guess it's just a few years old. And there's all of a sudden all these new regulations for how a business or how your building should be structured.
Yeah.
And it cost them half of their budget to fix and almost put them out of business. Like they literally had to come to us parents and go, we're going to have to close down if we can't find a way, you know, like we need to all as a community find a way to fix this.
Sure.
You know, whether that means we donate more money to the school, you know, all this kind of stuff. And all because, again, it's those regulations that, you know, of course, the public schools were exempt from this. Mm. You know, like the buildings that are 20 years old. This building was only a couple years old and it still needed tens of thousands of dollars to retrofit something that they just made up. But all the public schools are exempt. Like that's, you know, that stuff obviously makes me insane.
Absolutely.
But it's that same thing. It's, there, you know, like we don't want these weird out there schools to operate when we want all our kids in the public education.
Yeah.
But we don't have as much of that problem with what we teach because we're talking about information products online.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
So the regulations are completely different.
Yeah. Wes also recommended a book to me that I bought and I'm actually reading called The $100 Startup, which is about micro business.
I believe that's Chris Guillebeau.
Yeah. It was kind of like reassuring and refreshing to know what you might be getting into. Like, okay, this has a ceiling as far as what it can be, but these are all things that could be possible. I mean, I think you're kind of going into this abyss when you're talking about setting up a cleaning business or delivery service or a restaurant. Sure. where you don't know, first of all, not only what the cost of starting business, but what the cost as far as regulation and litigation would be of even being able to continue business. So I think that entrepreneurship is something that a lot of people are turned off to because of fear of the unknown, you know? And I, yeah. and I think that what you're doing and what Chris Gillibrew is suggesting in this book, you know, maybe thinking about a scale that's workable for you.
The way we teach business, we're trying to come up with another word, whether it be a valuepreneur instead of an entrepreneur, because I mean, to be honest, I don't have it in me to start a restaurant. I know the failure rate, and that to me is hard.
Right.
Me talking to you like this, this is how I do our show. This is how we do our content. I'm in my house. This is a home office. My kids are downstairs. And when I'm done with this, I'm going to go be with them. Mm-hmm. That easy. You know, I'm in shorts right now. I'm not in a suit. You know, like this is a whole different type of business. The regulations are incredibly low. I definitely suggest as soon as possible getting a CPA. Let them handle it. Like if I get something from the state, I give it to my CPA and say, you know, figure this out. Send me the bill. I'd rather do it that way. I want to know as little as possible, but you know what I mean? Like I'm willing to pay for that to get that off my plate.
Right.
Because that stuff makes me insane, obviously, with the whole freedom idea. Oh, makes me crazy. But it's still nothing compared to brick and mortar businesses.
Yeah.
It's low startup costs, incredibly low. I think, you know, like to start what we do is well under $500.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talks about the $100 startup. It's a little bit different, but not much more. And we're talking about kind of an expert-based business where it's incredibly scalable. You know, we're into seven figures with Jason and I have never done a show or any of the course together in the same room. He lives in Portland. He's lived all over the world while we've been doing this. And, you know, we do it from home offices.
Yeah.
And just an internet connection. Now, this microphone, I don't know, it was $300 or something. But when I started, it was just a headset like this, $67 headset that we were recording everything with.
Yeah.
So it's a different world than a normal, let's call it, entrepreneur that like kind of risks tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, I had very little money when I started.
Yeah. Yeah. The second item on this list, ways you can tell that starting a purpose-based business is intrinsically motivated. You want to make an impact on the world or at least a group of people in a market you're passionate about. So I think that we just pretty much covered that with what we're talking about as far as, yeah. you know, fine tuning this. The third one, you listen to and read just about everything you have time for in the area of starting an internet business. You can't get enough. And of course, that's applicable to whatever you want to do.
Well, and we find that all the time. I mean, there's lots of shows now about internet business, and most of the people that, you know, do our course, they listen to our show and like eight other people. Mm. And just like half of those people don't have courses or they just bonded with us in a different way. We teach it a little different. We're very much about the mindset stuff as well as the nuts and bolts. We teach the step-by-step stuff, but the thing we're most interested in is the mindset along the way, the creating value and, you know, being passionate about it.
Mm. The next one, you have a deep desire to live life on your terms. Geez, that's something that we're talking about a lot here, you know, yeah. on this show. And it's so unfortunate that people are almost by the time they become adults, and it's even continued in college, that they're living life on somebody else's terms. And it's kind of selfish and irresponsible to even ask to turn that around and live it on your yeah. terms. We have, most of us anyway, about 15,000 solid hours of conditioning, living this sacrificial existence with this promise that our sacrifice and our meekness will be rewarded at some point in the future. And we were talking about this the other day, you know, that's religion, you know, suffer now for eternal salvation. That's yep. Liberalism and progressivism, you know, give us 75% of the product of your labor so we can create this perfect utopia. That's patriotism and, you know, sacrificing yourself in a war. That's childhood for most people. So we see the challenge, and I'm sure this is a challenge that you work with in what you do, of overcoming that, pretty much doing a complete 180 as far as mindset is concerned for how we're going to live the rest of our lives.
Yeah, it's funny because there's that 180 where you're working on autonomy and individualism. But strangely enough, what we see happen is you become very much about helping people. I mean, it's such a weird, we were even, Jason and I were talking about this today. I'm like going, you know, I recently read, what's it called? The Virtue of Selfishness by Ayn Rand. And I'm like, I very much agree with a lot of what she says, yet my main passion is doing everything I can to help people escape all those traps.
Yeah, but that's satisfying like, your passion, you know?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's understanding that my passion is helping, and that's part of what that, you know, living on your own terms, it does turn around and become, how do I serve a market? How do I create massive value for a group of people I'm passionate about? It's funny because, you know, I mean, I've been doing this now for almost 8 years, so these are very normal for me, but this isn't typical to even think this stuff, to even consider these things. And this little list of six came from somebody saying, hey, when you work with somebody that, you know, wants to start an internet business, can you tell if they're going to make it? Like, that's just something that people say. And I basically said, if you're here, and you had the desire, you came and looked for and found our podcast or our website, that desire is the ticket to making it. You just have to not quit.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's going to be easy. That whole get rich quick or it's easy to make money online, I don't buy that.
Yeah.
It's different than digging a ditch, you know, finding out about yourself and really thinking about what's my single motivating purpose is actually hard. And, you know, like we try not to sugarcoat that. For some people, it's really hard. Now, you know, I've been very about personal development. It was a lot easier for me to find, but, you know, for some people, it takes a long time to, you know, work through and believe in themselves enough to go, it's okay. Like the reason we kind of have changed a little bit more the format of the show recently and been more mindset is because I was still scared to be excited and passionate about this stuff.
Yeah.
Like I, you know, it was just self-esteem stuff after all these years. It seemed like you're supposed to be about money. So we tried that a little bit for a couple of years, got a little bit sidetracked and found that, you know, we just don't have passion for the money. We have passion for the stories of people succeeding.
Yeah.
But it's all about that. If you've got that desire, that desire is the ticket in.
Right. And I think this is something that is so much more common in the world than most people realize. You know, I mean, maybe my audience is a little bit wiser to this than, you know, most people who are sitting in high school or college classrooms or in cubicles, you know, somewhere out in the corporate world. The last part of this that I wanted to cover that's so important is actions to take. You provided a list of four here. The first one, start thinking about and focusing on your internal interests. Any specific strategies that are helpful for doing that? I mean, I found that trying to keep a journal and then kind of reviewing it on a weekly basis, and I would even write at the top of the page, like, here's a theme for this page, just so I could go through it like quickly, was helpful for me trying to live more consciously and also keep some tabs on that.
Yeah, honestly, again, the let's say two books that helped me the most on this was, again, Unique Ability by Dan Sullivan. And one of the things he talked about was, well, there were two things. One was, it was a like keeping a journal. It's basically, what are things that you're doing where time just flies? Now, some of that will be activities. You know, maybe you're somebody who's a climber and you like that. There's those, but really what you're trying to do is find out, you know, what it is about you that interacts with the world that you enjoy the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like for me, chatting like this, like going to a coffee shop and chatting with people about stuff that I'm passionate about and trying to help them with that is more interesting to me than traveling the world or going and playing soccer. Or even though I might like some of those other things, I found that those were the things that were most important. The other thing he had you do, Dan Sullivan, was you actually find people that are really close to you and you ask them a certain series of questions, including, what do you kind of come to me for? What do you expect from me when you talk? Like when you're going, what am I going to do today? Oh, I want to talk to Jeremy. Why?
You mean people, you know, just like, in your personal life?
Yeah, personal life. People that know you well. So I did everything from my mom to just really close friends. And strangely enough, even my mom, like there were certain people that I go, okay, they see one side of me, right? My mom doesn't see all my sides, right? You know, she sees the sun side and, you know, maybe I'm this way. Every single one of them said, if they need some inspiration or motivation, they come to me. Every one of them.
Yeah.
Like it was so clear to them they didn't talk to each other. Some of them don't even know each other. Like, you know, some of my best friends don't know my mom, but it was really clear to them when I asked some of the questions in that book, like I said, you know, what do you come to me for? What, you know, like what makes you desire being around me other than, oh, it's my son. But, you know, there's other deeper meanings that you have with sharing time with people. And there were things like that, that were incredibly important for me to go, okay, it's okay to be this guy. It's okay to be the inspiration guy. I always thought it just didn't have any value other than it excited me in the moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, would people pay for that? Like, that just seems crazy that, you know, inspiration could be paid for. And, you know, it took me years, but I finally found it. Now, had I known, you know, all of these specific steps, it wouldn't have taken me years. You can find it very quickly if you're willing to put in that time.
Right.
Well, and the other book was Strength Finders. Understanding what your strengths are and understanding it's okay not to work on your weaknesses. That's a crazy concept. And in fact, school teaches you almost to focus on your weaknesses, which, you know, in history, the people that, you know, do the greatest things with life and not just financially, but make huge contributions, they focus on a strength or a series of strengths rather than their weaknesses. And that's what the book talks about. And it helps you find what your, you know, top five strengths are so you can start focusing on those.
Yeah.
And for me, my top one was communication. So being able to do this and communicate. And so I focus on this instead of, you know, I'm not as interested in specific facts. Like I like them when I'm studying for myself, but I don't relay them well after. Whereas Jason's more that guy. That's what works with our, you know, our teamwork, but I focus on the things I'm best at. And so does he.
What an interesting dynamic that, you know, people have with the quote unquote educators in their lives. And I mean, I know this from experience. When you're in a meeting or you're dealing with a student one-on-one, it is virtually never a conversation about their strengths.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I came to work with zero people in academic tutoring, you know, as a result of their strengths. That academic stuff just got to be too much because it was always, it was like, all right, I'm here again to talk to you about, even though there's all these things in your life that you love and that you're good at and that bring you excitement and joy, I'm here for the next hour and a half to really focus on, you know, what you suck at and why.
Yeah.
you know, just that was heart-wrenching. And so, yeah. So this is such a waste of time and such a being a policeman, you know, and an enforcer for this terribly corrupt system. So is there any other, there's a few more items on the list here. I know we're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you really want to hit on before I let you go as far as the taking action piece is concerned?
Well, I mean, the other two, very simply, number three is make a plan or find a plan.
Yeah.
And obviously in the internet business world, of course, I was saying, you know, you could certainly check out our stuff, but there's lots of great stuff out there. And basically it's like, once you actually know what your purpose is, it's okay. You know, like there's no rush on this. Take the time to make a real plan and know that a lot of times, you know, your plan might change. But that's the next step, is to actually start taking that action towards a plan. And number four, like is just said, was take bold action. Actually go ahead and commit and say, I'm going to do this. Even if it takes me 5 years and I got to still work my job or whatever as I'm getting to there, like a lot of our people, you know, again, I said they're 25 to 45 are a lot of normal people for our main core group is that age. And they've got jobs, they've got families, they can't just quit. You know, they've got to do this in their spare time and get there. But, you know, I always say, you know, you'll succeed as long as you don't quit. If you fail or you make mistakes, that's okay. The only way you can fail really is if you quit.
Right.
So, you know, it's just a matter of taking bold action and keep moving forward towards it.
Yeah. I mean, mistakes can be, I think the other problem too, and this is something that I talk a lot about in my work, is that people are always taught to be terrified of mistakes, yeah. Right? And what the result often is quitting before they even start.
Yeah.
So,
well, and honestly, there's so much I could have written in this, and I might do multiple versions of this intrinsic motivation things, but it's also, you know, understanding how you believe intellect works. Are you born with a certain level of intellect? Is this, you know, sorry, this is how I am, or can you change?
Right.
And you've got to understand and believe that you can progress and change in order to do something like this. And you can, everybody can, but some, you know, we're almost taught. And that's part of that failure thing. We're taught, oh my gosh, if you don't know the answer, you're stupid.
Right.
But it seems crazy because, you know, it might take two or three times and then I'll remember things. I don't learn things. I don't memorize things normally. You know what I mean? Like, we're taught to memorize. So I wasn't as much into that side of school. I had to work really hard to memorize because I'm more of a visual. I'm more of a chatted out type person. I need to ask a lot of questions so that I get it in my mind a certain way. But, you know, we're not taught to do that. And you've got to get over that feeling because out in, let's say, the world of, you know, finding this purpose and then, you know, getting paid for it, you can just keep trying stuff.
Yeah.
Keep trying until you find it. I mean, like, you know, I know we've talked a couple of times of, you know, your show and developing that. And it's like, you just keep trying. Like to me, I go, it's going to, you know, it'll work. Now it might not be what you first thought when you first started, but again, if your plan is not to quit, then it will happen.
Well, I mean,
that's the weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you this, like the last time we talked was a year ago. I think it was last February. And as far as being an inspiration guy, you also gave me some pretty concrete advice. And I, you know, took everything that you said and gradually over time, you know, put it into action, just like real nuts and bolts, like use WordPress, set up a bonus content site, that kind of stuff. And I, like where I am today, if somebody had told me right after that conversation, you know, if you do this stuff in a year, you'll be here, I wouldn't have believed them. So I definitely, I thank you. And I agree. I think that when something doesn't work, it's just like, okay, what's the next thing to try? This is the direction. This is the momentum. This is what I'm doing. So if this isn't getting me the results I want, what's the next thing that I'm going to do? And what else do I need to do? I looked into doing some like side work, like getting back into some skills that I was hoping I could leave behind, like painting and renovation. Like, okay, what ditch do I need to dig to keep doing this? You know what I mean? So
yeah, it's almost all mindset that gets in the way.
Right.
You know, Wes and I talk all the time about monetizing things with him, and he's got a certain aversion to marketing. Mm. And like when I started, I didn't know anything about marketing. It's not like I was born some genius and at age six, I was selling $1 million worth of lemonade because I'm an entrepreneur. I just wanted it so bad. I basically burned the bridge. I quit my job and I was like, I got to make this work. And I'm going to use my entire life to find a way to make it work. So in my mind, I kind of created my future. It's going to work because there's no other option. I'm going to keep going. Now, if that meant I had to go work at Starbucks or be a delivery driver for Pizza Hut or something to help supplement my getting there, I would have done it gladly.
Yeah.
Right. To be able to get to that purpose and share that value with
people. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. I think that was really helpful. And thanks so much too for that post. I really enjoyed reading it. What can we plug for you here before I let you go?
Well, really, while you're at the blog, even in this post, I actually linked to a couple of episodes we've done on your single motivating purpose and just purpose in general, the importance of a purpose-driven business. Like that would definitely be the thing to focus on, listening to stuff like that. Check out the Unique Ability book or Start With Why by Simon, I always forget his last name, but you know, like trying to start really dedicating to that is, you know, my passion. That's what I want to share with people. That's what I hope people walk away with, is finding more about that so that they can, you know, design their life and have that autonomous, individualistic life that ends up helping people.
Mm. Well, Jeremy, thanks again so much for your time. I'll let you get to your kids and your evening. And hopefully we can do this again sometime in the future. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Have a good night.
All right. You too. Bye, everyone.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. I hope you found that show to be helpful and enjoyable. And now I want to continue on with these end of the show previews of our additional content that is available at schoolsucksproject.com in the AV Club. Hundreds of hours. Don't anticipate that anyone would be able to listen to all of it, but there's some really good stuff in there. And, you know, I want to show you. You can join by going to schoolsucksproject.com/AV. And today we are moving on to the next section. I've just been going section by section here. And the next section is called Unreleased Podcasts. And the title of this post is More on Kant. It is a response to a Facebook post on the School Sucks Project Facebook page that criticized my assessment of Kant in one of those American Way series shows. This was recorded on April 9th, 2012. Wow, that was a year ago, huh? Wow. All right, here it is. That was a year ago today. Wow.
As far as that show was concerned. Now, the most direct students, the most direct disciples of Kant were Hegel and Fichte. So, obviously, I think I said, I hope I said, right from the start of the discussion about Kant, is that to a certain extent, some of the things that he wrote, because he had this very bizarre, archaic style of presenting his ideas, were open to interpretation, and people who were more loyal to the state, to Prussian masters like Fichte and Hegel, were probably able to put a twist on his work that was, like I said, widely open to interpretation, and I did not want to pin it all on Kant. As far as the rise of, collectivism, and ultimately, I think what William also mentions is genocide. Not entirely the work of Immanuel Kant. But I want to get into a little bit of this consequentialism talk. I wouldn't say that I'm anti-consequentialism, because I think that even when we're talking about virtue ethics, self-knowledge is a very important factor. And virtuous action usually has the best consequences. That's what I've found. Like, I've done experiments in my life with certainly non-virtuous action. And, well, I shouldn't say it like it was an experiment, like, you know, Zimbardo or Milgram was doing. Like, I was an ass, you know, when I was younger. And I did a lot of things that were very self-serving at the expense of others. And that did not lead to anything that was particularly rewarding as far as the conscience was concerned long term. But I did both, right? I've tried both in my life up to this point at 34 years old. And I found that the latter has much better results. So if that is an evaluation, I mean, first of all, I mean, who am I even talking to here? I don't want to make this exactly just for William. Consequentialism is the idea that ideas should be evaluated, or ethics, an ethical system, where an ethical system is a framework, and then that is put into action, that what should judge the ethical framework, the blueprint for action, would be the consequences. Well, I think that we do obviously act in accordance with concern for consequences a lot of the time. My understanding and why I've been critical of the whole umbrella term consequentialism in the past, with my limited understanding, is because of surface studies that I've done into people who would be considered consequentialists, like Auguste Comte, the Live for Others, if you want to look him up, and utilitarianism, people like Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill, the greatest happiness for the greatest number of people. And I think that these things are deeply flawed, because when we talk about the consequences of actions, yeah, that sounds great. Like, I want to have actions that result in desirable consequences. Well, what can this lead to? It certainly leads to war and all kinds of state predation, because people who these practices and this propaganda is inflicted upon, they don't check back for results. So governments can use consequential arguments to say the result of this action will be this. It will be virtuous. It will be democracy in Iraq or whatever. But people who that message is targeted towards, they get distracted and they go on to other things. And most people don't check back on government actions or government programs. So I see consequentialism as a black and white alternative to virtue ethics, which I don't believe it is, has some serious flaws by itself. Now, as far as the whole we should evaluate people by what the intentions for their actions are, I was critical of that in the show, and this is what William called me on, saying, well, you know, Brett, that sounds like a real consequentialist argument, but you're really critical of consequentialism. Well, there's a lot of gray areas with evaluating people based on intentions, because people can be selective as far as a or assigning intentions back to their actions. Well, what I was trying to do was this. You know, my only goal was this. Like, if you told somebody a truth that you shouldn't tell at a certain time, like a truth that's going to get somebody killed, let's say. I know that's kind of a wild example, but then you would say, oh, well, you know, I just wanted to be honest. Well, that probably wasn't the most preferable action in that situation to get a person killed because, well, my intention was to be honest. So the intentions are always kind of like left up to our trust in the doer, right? So a person says, yeah, but look at my intentions. Well, they can do ex post facto rationalizations for their actions by saying that they had good intentions. And I think that that's very dangerous, potentially dangerous when you bring the psychology of power into the equation. Right? Because they can do whatever they want and then make up some crazy shit reason for doing it that sounds good. And that's no good. We can be very selective as far as intentions are concerned. Even though I think William sounds like he's done much more homework on this than me, I don't agree with his assessment where he appears to divide consequentialist ethics and virtue-based or intentions-based ethics, Kant's thing, as two completely different black or white polar opposites. I think there's a lot of overlap, and I think that, yeah, we act with some concern for what the consequences will be. And sometimes the most virtuous action that we could take just on the intentions level does not produce the best consequences. So it's not either or, I don't think. I think it's more of a melding of the two. But I say from my own experience that the crossover between